You're listening to Read Between the Letting with Aaron Heath
and Matt McInerney. It's April 5th, 2009. Today we have Glenn Garriott from Form 55 on the show.
We talk a bit about Form 55, as well as the transition from university to the professional design world.
We go on to talk a bit generally about design education and designer's block.
And certification. Should designers have to be certified? RBTL starts now. All right, everybody. Today we have on the show Glenn Garriott from Form 55. You may know this blog from, they post a lot of great stuff. I visit them quite often. I mean, it's based in Europe, really, so the UK and everything surrounding. But always wonderful work. So, Glenn, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for coming on. Do you want to talk a little bit about yourself, your history in design, and a little bit about Form 55 as well?
Yeah, sure. I'm a graphic designer currently living in Germany. I grew up here and lived here for 16 years, but my mom and dad are both Scottish, so after I finished school here, I just kind of got to a point where I wanted to, you know, go back to Scotland and see what it's like there, and I had a chance to go to school there, and I went to Dundee University after finishing school in Scotland and doing like a portfolio course, because my art teacher never really mentioned that I needed a portfolio to get into art college, which didn't really help very much. Did that for a year, went to got into Dundee University. The art college there is called Duncan of Jordanston College of Art and Design. And you do, it's a 4-year course. You do 1 year where it's just like a mix of everything and anything. It's more like if you don't really know what you want to do. And I wanted to do architecture because of my dad. And my maths was just so appalling that I never made it into that. So after my year there, you get to pick a few courses that you want to try out, and one was graphic design that I just tested for, I think it was 2 weeks, and it seemed to work out quite well. I seemed to do something that the teachers liked and that I kind of enjoyed doing. And then, so I decided to go with that, and then 3 years later, finished off. And you know, during my time, I learned so much in the short space, and tried to do as many work, you know, as much work experience as possible. And out of that, I got a job in the end in Edinburgh for a company called Elmwood, and they're like, all over the UK and Australia, and they've just opened a New York office, I think. Did my 2 years there, and I mean, in the 2 years that your first 2 years out of uni, you learn, I'd say 10 times more than you ever learn in university, because it's just it's just so different. I'm always you know, on the side of saying that universities just need to work a lot harder, really, to make a course much more realistic. I mean, Dundee does it pretty well, but I still think there's, you know, room for improvement. And
why do you think that is? Do you think it's the time, how long you get to work on certain projects,
I think,
at university, or?
Yeah, I mean, that's one side. You know, you just have like a ridiculously long time scale. I mean, in Dundee you do, I think, maybe 4 to 5 projects a year. You know, that gives you, and then you have like 6 months.
That is a long time, actually.
I mean, so there are a lot of courses that do give you more projects, but I think even if they say, okay, you know, you need to have time to speak to all the students, you need to have time to grade them all and give them feedback, and it's difficult. You know, if you had a short time scale, it would just be difficult to do it with some. Some courses have like 150 people in 1 year. I mean, my course was quite small with about 30, I think. And there's other sides, like, you know, you never work, I mean, okay, at the moment I'm working by myself, but if you work for a design agency, you'll never work by yourself. It's always like a team effort, you know. You might be lucky enough to to have a project from beginning to end. It really depends on the structure of the studio you're working in. And that's why I think universities should mix single projects with, you know, projects that you can do, you know, in groups of like three or four maybe or something like that.
You know, you talking about this actually is making me reflect on our school a little bit, because we have a class specifically for that. It's a business of graphic design class in which its teams are set up as a design firm.
That's pretty good.
It's the first time we've encountered it in the school. It's the first time I've ever done a group project, but it's a nice way of approaching it. And also, Aaron and I both ended up being creative directors. So that's
pretty cool. That sounds like a great idea, though.
It is actually a pretty fun class. I'm really glad that we do it here. The other thing is that you were saying 4 to 5 projects a year. How large scale are these projects?
I mean, usually they're like, you know, I mean, in your final year, you only get 3. You have to pick a personal project, so you write the brief yourself, because that's quite a difficult thing to do as well, you know, when you have free reign, you can do whatever the hell you want, and you have to try and build your own constraints and what you want to do with that, and you know, so I think that's why they do encourage you to do one personal project, and then
it is funny how that tends to be the most difficult thing to do is when somebody says just do whatever you want, and you go, oh no.
But I always feel like I've always compared that to fine art, though, in a way, because, you know, design and fine art, that's one difference to me, is that I'm much better at having a problem and solving it and looking at it with some sort of restrictions and creating the problem the problem in a way.
It's one thing I had to realize after being a teenager is that I kind of like restriction. Uh-oh.
Anyway, go ahead, continue.
I mean, so during my 2 years at Elmwood, me and my friend Jack, who started Form 55 with me, he went down to Newcastle and started work there for a company called Sumo Design.
Have you put them on Form 55 before?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm pretty sure, I have seen them. I really like their work.
Hi. Sumo's creative director, Jim Richardson, he's the person that started The Serif. And last year in October, I think Jim had decided that it just kind of, you know, he was just too busy with work, and I think his wife was having a child, you know, they were having a child, so I think he just decided that he didn't want The Serif to die a slow death. He wanted, you know, to go out with a bang, so to continue it without really losing everything. So he asked us if we wanted to, you know, maybe merge. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, maybe by the time we redesign the site next year, we could do that. And he said, no, I'd like to do it tomorrow. So it wasn't a huge transition, you know. You basically just give everybody else on The Serif a new account. You tell everyone about it. You put up with the amount of abuse that we got from a lot of The Serif readers. And then,
did you get a lot of abuse?
No, well, not abuse. I mean, it was more like, I think people were disappointed because I really didn't think we would have such a, you know, like two completely different audiences. I thought it would be the same people, you know, maybe like starting off with The Serif in the morning and then reading us, or the other way around. But, I mean, we doubled our figures in that merge, so there was an obvious, I don't know, like...
You know, I came from The Serif, actually.
I did, too. I was a Serif reader, and that's what turned me on to 55.
So how did you feel?
Well, no, it's great. I mean, I'm glad I found it now, and I love it. But then, he started Fleuron now, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was kind of... I think he
just got back in the game.
I haven't actually spoken to him about it yet. So I got an email just saying I don't think he actually wanted it to be, you know, like released like that. He said that it wasn't quite finished yet and that it was more like a side project from Sumo, and all of a sudden someone on Form 55, Greg I think, had found it and put it on there, and then, you know, the cat was out of the bag.
Well, he posts so much on there. It's ridiculous how much he can find and go through in a day.
I mean, if you start from scratch, you know, you have a bit of an easier job at the beginning.
That's true.
We're now at 2,500 almost links. I mean, you know, okay, maybe 100 of those are kind of information. There must be a few duplicates in there. We really try hard not to have any duplicate links in there. You know, like I keep telling people, you know, to like search first, because you get into a stage now where it's just so difficult to find new stuff. But we're right. You know, we're happy to post updates. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, we really encourage everyone that we post. We try and get in touch with as many people as possible and say, you know, if you do anything new and exciting, please let us know so that we kind of get a head start. You know, it's just like, it's so you have to be so fast when you want to get a story in there first.
So where are you finding most of this stuff? Are you, do you have a huge RSS reader? Are you searching this stuff on Google?
I have a obsession with my RSS reader.
Yeah.
I haven't actually checked. Let me quickly check how many... I must have at least 100 that I read regularly, and then, I mean, so that I can't actually see my stats here. I'll have to have a wee look, but there must be like at least 100 blogs I read daily. But then there's a lot of stuff in there that I'd never post, and you know, it's just like it's more for me. I mean, the whole point of us starting Form 55 was me and Jack constantly sending each other links and saying, oh, did you see this? It's so cool. Or, you know, this, like, how nice that poster or that packaging or whatever. And then a month later, you'd be working on something and thinking, oh, Jack sent me that really cool thing last week. Or I sent it to him.
Yeah.
Or, and then you have to, like, go through your emails and you won't find it. You have to send Jack an email and he won't remember it. I think it basically came down to me and him having really bad memories. And the gym had started the Serif at that point, so we had heard about WordPress and how easy it is to use that to write a blog. I didn't even know what the hell a blog was. I didn't know there were so many design blogs already out there. You know, I mean, back in the day, I used to read, you know, I used to call them portals, and I used to read SurfStation and KKK and Australian.
Those were the days.
You know?
And actually, that's worth the days I hated pornos, but I didn't know that at the time.
I mean, it's so
similar, how did you guys...
now, isn't it? I mean, when you think about it, it's just like I'd been reading them all the time, and I'd never really thought about that it would be so easy to do that yourself.
Good thing you did. How did you come up with the name? Where'd Form 55 come from?
I mean, originally, when it was just me and him, it made a lot of sense, because he's from Glasgow. I lived a lot in Edinburgh, and I think it had something to do with, well, I mean, we made a list of like 100 names, and then you have to find a URL that works, and in the end, we had Form and the 55 from, I think it was the 55 degrees latitude, I think Glasgow and Edinburgh are on the same degree, so we thought, well, that's a connection at least, and... you know, it's all like we see, you know, like form follows function is like a, you know, it's like a great mantra to live by when you're a designer, I always think. So we always felt that that kind of related to what we do. And we thought, if we don't just decide on a name this week, we'll still be thinking about it next month. So let's just go with it. It's like a working title. And then we can still change it later on, you know, if we think of something better, and then it just kind of stuck.
I've heard that so many times too, that whole naming scheme, and then things just stick.
Yeah,
I was gonna comment on that too. I think that's how most names are born. Just well, this will work for now, and then it stays that way forever, which I think is fine.
It's more charismatic
works,
in a way.
We did go through an exercise of trying to come up with a new name, but it didn't go down so well.
Well, FFF, I think it's I don't know, I like FFF. It's easy to
remember. Yeah, I mean, that's what everyone calls it now. I mean, I think you kind of just call it FFF or triple F, or it doesn't, you know, like, I hardly call it Form 55 anymore.
Yeah. How about the little Fs that you guys do have on the couches? What's that made out of? Where'd that come from?
They're actually standing in my studio. It's part of the word, there's part of the word Franklin. In my third year, you had to pick a typeface, a classic typeface, and you were supposed to design a promotional poster that the Type Foundry could send out to design studios, you know, to like promote a typeface that they might already have, but they might not be using as much as Helvetica or whatever. So mm-hmm. I picked Franklin Gothic, and you know, it was third year, so you didn't really have that much pressure on you, because all you had to do was, you know, just hand stuff in. It didn't really matter if you did that bad or good, because all that really mattered was your final year. So I thought, well, we've got a big workshop, you know, I haven't really been in there at all, you know. So I went in there with A4 sized Franklin Gothic printouts, and then just built all the letters, which was great fun. I love them now. But it was cool. Pretty handy that we had the F, because yeah. when we were trying to, you know, like when me and Jack did the first basic WordPress template, and we were like, oh man, what are we going to put in that header? Better try and figure out a logo. And then, you know, it's just like, we never had the time. And then my F was standing on my desk. I was like, you know, I'll just take a photo of that three times and then piece it together, and we'll use that for now. We had a great library in the office, so I just did that in the library, and which made sense yeah. because, I mean, I see Form 55 as my book collection almost. You know, it's you know, you're kind of stuck, and you're like, oh, I just need to like, you know, get some inspiration somewhere. And what I used to have done in university is flick through, you know, go to the library and just flick through as many books as I could. So it's just kind of faster, you know, version where you can search for something. And I mean, that's one thing that we really want to try and push in the new we're really working hard on the new site, and we want to try and encourage people to tag everything a lot more, so that, I mean, originally we really wanted to even tag colors and you know, like processes and typefaces, because then you could have just like searched, I don't know, letterpress, and then you'd get like loads of nice letterpress goodies and or like a color. And but, you know, there's other ways of going about that, I suppose.
It's interesting that we just kind of transitioned into one of our topics of designers
cleverly,
which is something we got asked on Twitter. But I think that's kind of why design blogs are taking off, because there's so much. I don't know. I find myself feeling like overwhelmed. Coming up with a new project from scratch, so you have to start from somewhere. So if you have no constraints at all, yeah. you know, you go to a design blog and you look at what's going on, so you have some starting point. I mean, is that why you read design blogs, Aaron?
It is, but and I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second, because I think I absolutely love design blogs. I visit Form 55, I visit The Serif, Grain Edit, and Graphic Exchange, if either one of you have heard of that.
Yep.
I love those sites. But talking about one thing I've noticed is that I think it hurts. Sometimes I think visiting all of these blogs kind of hurts you, because you become oversaturated and can't think freely for yourself a little bit, because you have all of these other ideas in your head. Does that ever happen to either of you?
No, yeah, I'd agree with that, man.
I think it does.
There's a fine line that you have to really find there.
Well, you know what I think is interesting is that the most interesting design work doesn't usually end up being inspired by other designers. It tends to come from some other medium or some place not design.
Well, I would agree with that. I think, and that's for the best, really.
I mean, so I guess that's probably the better solution to designer's block. But oh, it's so good to read design blogs. I mean, I'm always going to do it.
True.
I mean, I think it's more like, you know, I mean, some people might say, okay, you're kind of, you know, just looking at loads of other stuff, to maybe there's like one thing that will spark an idea. And then some people might say it's, you know, that's maybe too similar to an original that you've seen somewhere. And but, you know, right. there's the old saying that nothing's new, everything's kind of been done in one way or another someplace. And I think, you know, the amount of stuff I don't really ever, you know, like I look at so
retain
much.
It.
I don't think I remember many specific single projects or things that I see. I think it's like an amalgamation of everything I see
right.
daily and weekly. It just all kind of, you know, that's like what forms what you like and what you think looks good. I mean, that's how
it's
I
very
look
true.
At.
You know, actually, this is something I tell people a lot. I really do enjoy this contemporary European design. And especially because so much of what I see, you know, I am visiting things like Form 55 and The Serif, and there was already something to me that loved that kind of work. But there is most definitely a difference between things coming out of London and Scotland and Wales, and, as opposed to American graphic design right now.
It is true that he keeps threatening to move to Europe.
I get so mad because I have all these lists of firms that I absolutely love, and I go to them, and you know, when I look for internships or anything like mm-hmm. that, I go to them and I'm like, all right, well, you are in Wales, London, Germany. This isn't going to work for me. I wish that there was some. There's no American equivalent to, because you guys, I know you guys do post some American firms and everything like that.
Try.
But there's no. Yeah, there's no American equivalent though to this that. That's out there to Form 55, which is kind of an interesting
there must
hole
be.
In our blog.
Wait, I'll have a wee look through my list. There must be some American blogs I read.
It sounds good. It's still not gonna fix anything for me though, because I still love this type. There's, I don't know, Matt. Would you agree that there's, you see this difference in contemporary European design and American design?
I think it's pretty
obvious.
I don't know.
Like
can
Airside
we,
and Sea and
yeah. Can we blame it all on David Carson being an American? I don't know.
I don't think so, because you could go on to say that Neville Brody is a European.
That's
so.
True, but it's still very different.
That's true too.
I tend to like the work of Neville Brody over David Carson, and I think you
yeah,
would agree.
Here.
I would agree. Anyway, so back to designer's block. How do you guys combat designer's block? Any ideas?
Touch wood. I haven't had that many problems with it in a while, but I mean, I'd say, you know, like, just I think a lot when I have you know, hit a brick wall when, you know, trying to think of an idea, I think it's usually because I, you know, like, I worry too much about it and I put too much pressure on myself. You know, it's either like a deadline, or, you know, maybe you're just, you know, maybe it's like a massive project or a big pitch. And you really want or need to win it, and that's like, you know, that's a lot of pressure to put up with.
Yeah.
So I think it depends. I think the designer's block depends on how much time you have. Like if you're struggling because you have like a day before you have to, you know, hand things in or send them to a client or whatever, then, you know, then you have to be quick with, you know, how to get rid of your block. So, I mean, what I would do is, you know, like have a quick scan through Form 55, or, you know, like, I love Found, because I don't know if
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't know if you guys know that. It's like a visual overload. You know, you've just got this big mass of images and you can just kind of quickly scan through them, and they might just be like a color or like a photograph or someone else's design, or, you know, like, there might just be anything in there that might just kind of kickstart something. Or, I mean...
I was going to say earlier, mm-hmm. the nice thing when we were talking about design blogs is that Found is kind of like that nice middle ground, because it's still this inspirational resource, but it's just about things that look nice, anything that
yeah.
can pop into your head, as opposed to specific design projects that have been completed.
You know what I was thinking about for designer's block is that there are two ways that I find this affects me. Is there's the one where you just don't have any ideas, but there's also the other side where you're so attached to a certain idea, and it's what ends up being your roadblock, but
mm-hmm.
you don't realize it. Like, let's say you're designing a logo and you've been going down this one path forever, and you just can't get it right, and it's just taking the time to step back and say, whoa, I'm not approaching this from all angles. I've been approaching it from one very specific one. And then you step back, you reassess it, and your solution might be there. But I find I have to remind myself from time to time that it's not always just one solution to the problem, or maybe I need to write down some of my bad ideas so I just get them out
yeah.
of my system.
I think that's a good point. You know, it's just like doing something, even if it's just writing down random ideas or just doodling, you know, just so you're actually... Just
oh, yeah.
give your
yeah.
brain some time to just focus on something else, you know, just draw some stupid faces or something, you know, like, just like, so you're not completely focused so much on one thing, and then maybe something will come out of that.
I think that bare intuition really helps in a lot of ways, and yeah, just doing something as drawing or writing or kind of this unconscious act
yeah.
really helps to get thoughts flowing that you wouldn't otherwise. I'm a big believer in intuition in that sense.
Well, there's also the approach, I think, I don't know if this is a myth or not, but the way Apple does it, where they ask all their designers to turn in their first round of ideas, and then they destroy those and they don't let them use them, just
That's
so they get them
good.
Out of their system, and then they can get on to the better ideas.
That would be interesting to try that one out.
Yeah, but then we wouldn't have the Citibank logo, so I don't know if that's always right.
Well, how do you go about brainstorming? I suppose I was talking to one designer specifically, and some people say that they really get a lot of ideas when they sleep, or they'll wake up right next to them and write something down in a journal.
Yeah, I'm bad for not keeping paper next to me next to my bed, because I think my brain just works over. I sleep really difficult. I just can't. My brain's always working when I go to bed, so I'm just lying there thinking about something. And
that sounds like a lot of us.
That's
actually, yeah.
That's me too. Do you ever find a solution to that, Glenn?
No, sleeping pills. I mean, I think that you might be right. Maybe that is quite a common thing, and maybe it's just because, you've just kind of got time to think about it. There's nothing else, especially.
Yeah, it is the best time. Being in the shower or laying down is when your mind finally kind of opens up to this.
I live in such a small village here in Germany now. Like, I left my company, the company that I was working at, Elmwood, after 2 years. I just kind of felt I got to a natural end and wanted to see what it would be like to come back to Germany and see, how the design scene is like here. It's quite different so far. I mean, I'm living in this tiny little village where my mum and dad live. I never thought I'd come back here, and it's so quiet at night, so you're just lying here and it's just like this deathly silence. So there's nothing else to, to distract you. So maybe that's quite a good thing to have that, to think about everything.
Yeah, I have started keeping a little notebook next to my bed in case I have an idea. And sometimes that happens. It sounds like one of those stories that people tell you, and you're like, yeah, I probably don't really do that though. But I actually started to do that. And it's kind of useful.
I'm telling you, this intuition, it really plays a role.
Yeah.
Just watching yourself and your thoughts, especially while you're doing other things, just walking down the street, it's, I think paying attention to these little thoughts that go through your head pretty quickly really helps in some ways, and not just rushing through the day. I usually find that that's what helps me the most, especially if I'm having trouble with something.
Yeah, I was standing in line in a subway the other day, and I realized the woman was asking me for a sandwich, but I had this idea for a design I was working on, and I was just not replying to her. I think those tend to be when I have my favorite ideas, where I'm just sitting around doing pretty much nothing, and then I'll just drift off into some idea. Actually, the idea was I was designing a website that was going to not support IE6. And so I wrote a conditional comment that set the entire thing in Zafting Bat if you look at it in IE6.
Yeah, I've had a few problems with that one. WordPress has made this great IE6 plugin that just puts this big yellow bar on over your website if you're using it, which seems to work quite well.
I think more and more people are going to start doing that. Way too much wasted time.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I was saying that when you hit a block and you don't have much time, that's like quite difficult, and there's not much you can almost do against it. But when you do have a lot of time, let's say you've got like still a whole week, but you already feel that you're not really getting anywhere, there's like so many other things that you can try. I mean, there's like just, again, I suppose just trying to look at as much inspiration as possible, and that doesn't have to be other people's work. Although I always find, not just looking at other people's design, like other designers' work, but maybe like other artists or product designers,
exactly.
Or like game developers. I'm like a huge gamer, and I got a chance to like work at Rockstar North for a while they were building GTA 4, and it was like so inspiring to like see how that's made and how passionate people are about that, like almost like on the verge of being too passionate for their cause, and
too passionate for a game where you beat up hookers,
old women.
Yeah. And but I find just what looking at other people doing incredibly amazing work, I find that inspiring, not because of what they're doing, but because I'm like, it almost makes you like jealous that they're just doing it so well, and it kind of motivates you to do.
Actually, it is pretty easy to get inspired by anything that's passionate, I've found.
That's like what we said last week. I'm a big believer that passion breeds passion.
Yeah.
If you're surrounding yourself with people who are very passionate about something, it's hard not to get excited about what you do.
It's like, but you know, talking to people, I mean, even if they aren't designers
or
other creative people, you know, just like talking to someone and like explaining what you're trying to do and what problem you're facing. And a lot of times it's maybe just because you're just like so into it that you just can't see another side of it. And you know, even just talking to someone who will never use the site or the product or whatever you're
Sometimes that's even better because it seems as though they're even more interested to hear about it and to understand how it works, and they can get even more excited in a way.
Yeah, and it is so easy for a fresh set of eyes to see the flaws that you're really not seeing.
Oh, yeah.
I end up using my roommates for this a lot, where I'll print something out and I won't say anything and just put it in front of them, and they'll see the little things that bug them about it. I'm like, oh, I really totally missed that because I've been designing the capital R for so long, or whatever the thing might be. Very useful though.
Yeah. All right, transitioning topics again. Do you mind if we talk about the new Form 55 site a little bit, or do you want to?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I sent you guys a little sneak preview.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not many people that have seen it yet, and it's been so long, and we wanted to really try and figure out what we want to do with it, and you know, like why we started. But you know, I mean, me and Jack aren't like programmers. There were so many things we wanted to do, and we just couldn't do it because. I don't know. But then, like,
Matt and I have a lot of the same problem with our current RBTL redesign, because neither one of us are programmers. We know some code, but we hate doing it. And I think this is becoming more common in graphic design, in the sense that designers, especially those who web design, people are like, okay, well, we understand you don't want to do PHP, but how about just a little bit?
Yeah, right.
Come on.
I know you don't code JavaScript, but can you build the site in JavaScript?
Well, I think you know, when we did try and do things and we were just like not getting anywhere, it's just like it's so frustrating. But I mean, now that we've got such a huge team now, we're like 30 people, and it's great. I mean, I'm a big believer in, you know, being good at one thing and trying to do that as good as you can, and then there's always, you know, you always have a chance to do multiple other things. But you know, like Alex Nelson, who's on our team, who's our main web developer, and he's just too good at it. You know, he does what would take me a month, you do in 5 minutes. So there's, you know, there's no point in me trying to become as good as Alex when he can just do it, like really well. And so we sat down with him, and we've just kind of tried to keep what we're doing, keep what we think we're doing well, which is just, you know, finding like the kind of work that makes you sick in the stomach because it's so good, and just keeping that as constant as possible. I mean, I'd like to say that we're one of the most frequent design blogs, but I mean, I don't have any stats
to back that up.
Subscribe to a lot of them. You guys are pretty up there in frequency and updates.
I can visit a few times a day and always find something new. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's why, you know, when it was just me and Jack at the beginning, we had to work so hard to try and find new things, and we were so happy to get more people on the team that were really passionate about it and that are good at what they do themselves. And now it's great to like get so many different views. I mean, we're trying to become more and more international, and it's been proven difficult to pick a country and get someone from there, but we get a lot of applicants, and it's great to like pick and choose who we want to have on the team. But we'd like to have more people, maybe from Australia, or you know, it'd be great to have someone from you know, like from Asia. We don't really have many readers or contributors from that side of the planet, which would be pretty handy. But on the news side, I think what we really want to push is, you know, that the content that we're having, like, I think you could see on the site design that I sent over to you guys, we're just simplifying everything a lot. Like, we're just trying to like strip everything back to what you want to see when you come to a design blog, and we're trying to add a lot more, you know, like editorial content. We want to try and do a video interview, which we've been testing a lot, but we haven't really had any decent results yet, because it'd be great to, you know, find a designer somewhere in America and be able to interview him over Skype or iChat and then show that to everyone. But we're still working on how that can, you know, be a decent quality. Otherwise, what we're thinking about doing is just, you know, like, our contributors don't get much out of Form 55 except for being part of it. So it'd be great to give something back to them by letting them interview like famous designers that they might have, you know, always wanted to meet. So if we do organize an interview and one of our contributors is in that city, then we'll try and get them to grab a camera somewhere and go up and ask them questions, which I think most of them would really enjoy. So hopefully we'll get someone there on board to agree to it. That's another thing, a lot of people don't like being filmed, so it might be a bit trickier than we imagined.
That would be cool though, and I devour that kind of content. Like anytime I find any video of any designer I like, I'm watching.
I'm so addicted to TED. I don't know if you know that site. It's like
We visit that a lot.
We reference this a lot, yeah. With the Paula Scher talk and the David Carson talk and the Stefan Sagmeister talk.
Today I was watching something about the future of war and all these robotic machines and stuff that they send into war. It's just incredible to see half those people talk about it.
Yeah, actually, there's another great source of inspiration just in general. Aaron sent me a link that had nothing to do with design a few weeks ago, one of these TED Talks, and it was incredibly inspiring to see a person passionate about a subject that I had no idea even existed. Like, I didn't know anything about it.
You know, you learn so much, though, and just having these ideas of culture and society and science and anything else can inspire you in so many ways.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so when are you guys hoping to have this new site? It looks great in the PDFs you sent us. I'm really excited about it.
The thing is, like, I wish that me and Jack would have started this when we were in uni. We just never really thought about it, I suppose. So now everybody on our team is in full-time employment. So it's difficult to, you know, you have to try and put in as many hours as possible. And so we're there. Like, Alex has been doing an amazing job with already getting the template working. And we've got some really nice little features that I didn't send you guys, so there's still some surprises.
All right.
And
excellent.
It's just now, you know, getting it to work perfectly and then having the problem of, you know, like linking all the existing posts into the new design. So what we'll probably do is keep Form 55 as an archive somewhere so that, you know, if you want to look at old posts, we don't want to, like, start from scratch. I mean, like I said, 2,500 right. links to do all that again would be a pain.
What was the transition from university to working professionally? Can we talk a bit more about that and, like, some of the things you really wish you'd known when you were a student that you know now working professionally, or some things that, that your university really should have taught you more about?
I'd say I had to learn quickly when I started work were just, I think, you know, like, the thing that really stood out for me was, like, printing process, you know, because you have to make sure that your design actually, you know, is actually printable, you know, and like that it can work, because, you know, in uni they don't really give you as many restrictions, well, at least in Scotland they don't, and you know, so you can kind of go a bit crazy, which is good. You know, you don't want to be, you're in a time in your life where you can just experiment and you don't have the constrictions of a client giving you feedback, and, you know, it's more just your teacher telling you if it's good or bad, and then you can decide to you know, go with it or leave it. But when you come into a studio and you have your first design and you have to write a print spec. And, you know, like, I was like, okay, so I pick a few colors, and they're like, yeah, sure, you know, you just, like, specify the colors and which paper and the folds and stuff. So it's just like when your first print job comes back, you're like, man, thank God that worked out. It's a pretty nervous moment. But, you know, I think that I always suggested when we were in uni that we could have gone to a printer and, you know, maybe just had a day out there so that they could show us how it worked. And
this is another thing that SCAD has done for us. Actually, yeah. We have a class specifically called production design, which is all about the printing process.
Excellent.
And setting up files. And we actually one of our field trips was we visited one of the larger printing mm-hmm. presses in on the East Coast of America here, and it was a great trip to see all of the they had gigantic presses. one of them is actually a German press. It starts with an H. What is that called?
Yep.
They just had huge ones. They had a room where they were mixing their own Pantone colors. just a lot of exciting stuff. You know, you learn so much.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first time I got to go to the printer. It was brilliant. You know, that's why I think that's like an easy day out at university. I mean, I suppose students could organize that themselves. I mean, while I was trying to, you know, just find a part-time job and stuff at uni, I emailed like every single printer in Dundee and said, look, I'm a decent designer, I can just do some work for you as long as I can just see how you guys, you know, how the whole place works and stuff. I'd be quite happy to, you know, work for free almost, and nobody wants to take me on, which would have been you know, I think would have been really useful to see to see both sides, because I mean in the UK there's a lot of different studio structures, and I suppose most will have a design stage and then an artwork stage, and then it'll go to production. So you have kind of a bit of a buffer where it doesn't have to be perfect before it goes to print. The artwork will check that everything's, you know, that all the typefaces are there, all the images are set right, and all the colors are available. And so you kind of, you know, you can be lucky if there is an artwork house, you know, or like an artwork stage. But then I know a few studios that where you're a designer and an art worker, so there's a bit more pressure on you to get it right first time.
Yeah. Designers being certified. Should designers be certified? There is this this comment that, you know, architects have to be certified because what they do, it can be dangerous. You know, it affects people's lives. The argument is that graphic design also does visual communication because you're still, in a way, affecting people's emotions. Signage, road signage, and things like that too. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that my dad's an architect, and you know, he like does a whole like massive range. I mean, he designed like the airport here in Hanover and stuff, and you know, but he also just does people's homes. So I had a chance earlier to ask him a few questions because the Formula One was postponed, and. He was saying how, you know, as an architect, you're certified and you kind of, you almost like learn about, like, it's almost like a code of conduct. So when he has to, you know, like when a client comes in, you know, say, okay, I need, you know, like say, let's say you're a family and you want to build a home. So you'll say like how many rooms you want, how much money you have, and maybe like a style that you like. And my dad gets all his business from word of mouth. Like, I've only just done his website, so he's only had a website for like a year, and he's never ever done any advertising, or, you know, he never really had an online presence or anything. So he just gets work because people trust that he'll do a good job because someone told him that. So I think,
well, that's kind of, you were saying kind of like a code of conduct. I guess that's, in a way, that reminds me of the First Things First manifesto and what maybe that was trying to be.
Yeah. I have a hard time imagining a certification program for graphic designers. I think my initial response when I heard the question was, no way. No, why? You know, there shouldn't be anyone governing this. And I guess you could make an argument that it would make, I don't know if it would make for better design in general, or it would just make for more of a kind of design. Because wouldn't you imagine if there's a governing body that has to certify you as a designer, aren't they going to have a certain taste, or inevitably that might happen?
Well, I think the pro of it is that it would give more credibility in a way to graphic design, as opposed to this kind of where people might be viewing it as this foofy, you know, intuitive, like, here you go. Do you like this
I've never
shiny
heard design.
Circle that we've given?
I've never heard graphic design described as foofy, but sure.
I have. I've heard, you know, people from the outside world, quote-unquote. But this goes back to something that Matt and I have kind of brought up a few times on the show, and that's the idea that where is the central nucleus of graphic design? And I don't think there is one. You know, we have some institutes in different countries that try to represent graphic design, but there's no union, there's no central body like there might be with other things. And I think it would be very difficult to create that. We have a really big culture, I feel like, and that's what I like about the show, is I feel like I'm more connected to the community, and I love the community. But the thing that's great about the community is how diverse it can be. And do you lose some of that diversity when you bring things in like certification and standards to some things?
Yeah, even stuff like, you have guys like Milton Glaser who illustrators seem to want to claim him as their own and designers want to claim him as their own. But he's not. It's not really fair to say, like, he does both very well. So would the governing body of graphic design say, well, he can't come in because he's more illustrator than not. Or let's say a painter wanted to be a certified graphic designer, would, you know, because we have such a hard time drawing the line between what is art and what is design. I have a hard time imagining a certification process that didn't bump up against those boundaries.
Would it stifle creativity in a way, I guess, is another question.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I think it would.
Yeah, my dad was saying an interesting point, which is they basically get guidelines on how much to charge, you know, like so that you as a client, you can say, okay, well, my building is this, you know, like it depends on volume and category. So my house is this big and it's a family home, so it should cost around about this. And then, you know, my dad said, you know, it's guidelines, so it's not, you could maybe leave a few bits away. You know, architects that have a name, you know, you can charge on your reputation, I suppose. You know, then you can just kind of make your own guides. But what you were saying,
that's really interesting though, because I mean, and see, that's something that could be a pro in graphic design too, not a con, in the sense that we're coming from some unified direction, and people see, oh, okay, this isn't just ambiguous.
Yeah, I mean, it could go either way, couldn't it? Because it could be great, especially, you know, like this is the first time I'm working on my own as like, you know, as a freelance designer, as an independent designer, and you have to like get used to, you know, like writing up costs and figuring out how long that's going to take you and how much you can charge for that. And you know, like as an independent first time designer, a guideline on how much things would cost would be really handy. But then it could turn either way, you know. I mean, then a client will think that you might be too expensive because the guidelines say that you should only, you know, charge that amount.
And That's true.
My dad was saying that a client always thinks that those guidelines are too expensive, so you always have to cut down a little bit.
This is one of those questions that students ask all the time about charging and what's appropriate to charge in graphic design. We had Jonathan Barnbrook come visit our classroom for a day. Great. And that was one of the questions he got asked. And I think he pretty much said, I still don't know what to charge. Like, I still am not really sure what I should be doing for
charging clients. Oh, I hear that too from professors. Yeah, everyone's always afraid of charging. I think a lot of designers are afraid of finances, and because I hear that a lot too, is if you're going to work for yourself, always find a really good
accountant.
Got, you know,
that
right away.
That one lined up already.
Yeah, there you go. I guess this comes back to, you know, something I said on an earlier show, and this certification thing. There's definitely pros and cons. Right now we might be a little too much in the middle to know what we want to do or what the best way is, and I guess everything just is.
Thanks, Aaron. Wow.
It's something that should be talked about more, I think.
No, it
though.
Should. But also, the other thing to remember is that, like, the reason an architect would be certified is, like, you know, if you were a terrible architect and you built a home that would fall on someone's head and kill them,
yeah,
that's a serious concern. Whereas in graphic design, like,
but you can't
what we do
make
is
that
important,
still.
But I don't think, for like, are things, we going to kill anyone if we're
well,
if we're incompetent?
Well, a poster might not kill someone, but there, it's that stretching of the term graphic design and visual communication, what that is.
Actually, we did have the conversation about photoshopping, and I guess technically we can kill by giving people horrible body images and in an indirect kind of way.
It's actually kind of serious, sure.
But, like I'm saying,
road signage, these are still information design, anything like that. If you're making an a pictogram of a little man, you know, do not touch, yeah, and someone doesn't understand that and touches.
What about instead of the you know, like doing harm to a person, doing harm to a company or a brand. I mean, look what the Pepsi redesign has done. I mean, I think that's a good example of killing a brand. I mean,
yeah. When you said road signs, the only thing I could think of was like just a mean graphic designer designing road signs that clearly steer people into oncoming traffic or into danger. Maybe that's what's going to have to happen. It'll be one horrible signage designer with a really bad sense of humor, and then we'll have to step in and reassess the whole situation.
I think overall, certifying a graphic designer would probably not be a... I mean, it would take forever to draw up a set of guidelines that everyone would be happy with, or that most people would be happy with, and I think it would just be, like you said earlier, it would be too limiting.
Yeah.
That's one thing, you know, but Glenn, I like your point about, yeah, we hold brands in our hands a lot too, and in that way it affects the economy. Not to sound so full of ourselves, but people's jobs are important. That's why the job exists. I'm a big believer that any job in the world nothing is more important than anything else, because it has a place in the world. That's why it exists.
Definitely.
But I think I started this conversation being pretty mostly against the idea of it, although, and at the end of it now, I'm a little more open to it, I think. I'm not saying I'm for it or pushing for it, but there are some ideas there that you
I wonder if there was a time where architects weren't certified, and how did that start, and how did those first guidelines get drawn up without people going, oh, that's far too limiting, we can't do that.
I'm sure there was a time where that was, there was a lot of argument about it, but give it some time, and then it just sounds like, it sounds standard, you know?
Well, what needs to happen is someone needs to hurt someone very badly through graphic design, and then standards will come about. All right, I think that's it. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for talking about Form 55. You did not say give us a release date, though. Any idea about when the new FFF?
Okay, well, let's try and say summer. I don't really... I need to check with a few people when exactly things are going to go live. But we're definitely aiming for summer. Like, we've already got our press release ready, and we're getting... we're trying to, you know, drum up a bit of support, because, you know, it's purely coming out of my and Jack and Alex's pocket at the moment, and our hosting costs are ridiculous. So we're trying to find like relevant supporters that want to like be part of it, you know, so it's not just random Google AdWords,
right,
or something. You know, we want it to be that you don't feel offended by it by coming to our site. We want it to be useful to our visitors. So,
right,
you know, we're going to be doing that over the next month. We want to launch with our first video interview. So I think until that really happens, that's going to be what's really keeping us back. But I'm going to, you know, we're working hard on it. So hopefully by the summer it should be live.
All right, great.
Do you have any other resources or websites you want to
Our little side project, 6x10, which was a book that we organized with 10 of our favorite illustrators from last year. And it sold out before we could even really tell anyone about it, which was incredible.
Wow.
I think we did like a really limited run of 60, all handmade, hand screen printed, hand folded and cut by myself, and sent all over the world. And we sold out in like 48 hours. So we couldn't even really tell anyone about it to, like, you know, really, you know, make it a massive big deal, like, because by the time we wanted to tell everyone, we didn't have any left, so they would have just been like, oh, well, what's the point? You can't buy one anyway. So that's 6x10.com. Issue 2 should be out by the summer as well, hopefully. We're already planning that, and we've already got 10 people lined up who are all like really happy to contribute, and the first time it was so much fun to organize, so we'll definitely do as many more as we can. I think that's about it. Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, check out form55.com. Glenn, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Glenn.
All right, Matt. So, this was episode 10, kind of a little bit of a milestone for us, I guess.
Yeah, I think officially we've eaten up about 6 hours of people's time, so hopefully we can fill a day at some point.
Well, this is a long episode, but let's take a minute to reflect upon what we've learned through the show so far. Okay. I've learned that I talk way too fast, number one. I apologize for that. Okay. And I've also learned that with all these guests, we keep on coming back to the same topics and same discussions, and I feel like I've learned a lot that a lot of us are thinking about the same things, really. One thing I want to get back to on the show, and I just want to let our listeners know, is that we do want to do more call to actions again. So call us. Call us and tell us what you want to see from us. Where do we go now? We've done 10 episodes. It's been 2 months. It's still pretty relatively new. We're still very childlike in this, and we have a lot to...
Mostly Aaron.
That's true. We have a lot to do. What do you guys want to see from us? What can we do that's interesting? We have a lot of ideas of these side projects that we're working on that hopefully we'll be able to talk about soon, but it's something that we just go on and on about. But we definitely want to hear from you. Please call in. We haven't gotten a few calls in a few episodes because we haven't had any call to actions. Another thing is we haven't had any prizes in a while, and I just want to go on record right now and say episode 15, we will give away a prize. If you have any prizes that you want to donate, please donate them to us. We'd love to give them away. But if we don't have any prizes to donate at that point that have been donated, I will spend my own money and buy a prize to send out by episode 15.
Wow. Big yes. Talk. Okay.
Yep. That's what we're
doing.
All right.
By episode 15, we'll have a prize. So anyway, next week on the show, we're going to have Stephen Coles from Typographia and Font Shop on. So if you have any questions for him, give us a call at 646-402-5686, and the extension is 20248. So ask him a question, or even if you just got a comment you want us to play on the show. And also you can reply to us on Twitter or email us at readbetweentheletting@gmail.com with questions.
Sounds good. That should definitely be a good show as well. We actually have some topics from this week that we didn't get to cover because we had so many other things to talk about, really, that we'll be covering next week as well. But definitely give us a call. I just wanted to say thank you. Thanks to everyone for listening. God, you guys have been great.
And we'll keep doing it because we love doing this. So thanks a lot, guys. You can find us online at readbetweentheletting.com or rbtl.us. You can also give us a call at 646-402-5686, extension 20248.
Feel free to email us at readbetweentheletting@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at rbtlshow.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks.
I'm Aaron. No, let's do it backwards this time. I'm Aaron.
No, because people will be confused. My grandfather's already like, wait, is that you? No, that's not me. You messed that up. Okay. Actually, you can go ahead and say the thing.
Okay. You know what? You could have just let that go.
I should have let it go.
And it would have been good. Fine, and now I have to edit it, you jerk. I'm gonna beat Aaron with a T-square later, so we can see if we can get some standards going.